And it is not with a view to academic interest that we are trying to understand or follow psychology. Our interest in psychology is really practical. That is to say, it is not what are the current theories and who are thinking about human psychology, and it's not our business to bother about the academic aspect of psychology today. What he took just general interest in order to show that the psychology which we want to pursue is full of practical interest for us. And before we take up the practical interest, we want to be sure that we are on firm ground. Well, firm ground, so far as Sri Aurobindo's yoga is concerned, we are on a very firm ground. There is no question of any doubt about the basis of human psychology. But men do not generally understand themselves. They do not understand their own psychology. And because it is complex, and it helps a little first to disabuse ourselves of the current theories which are superficial, more or less, and which are of secondary importance. Whereas, what we are now going to do is something of primary importance. That is why I first dealt with the problem of consciousness. That consciousness is really the field of psychology. And on the conception and understanding of consciousness, well, lies the whole basis of psychology, science of psychology. And we saw that from the point of view of Sri Aurobindo and the yoga which we want to pursue, well, consciousness is not mental consciousness only. That consciousness is a power of the infinite existence. It is something inherent to the being. It is that from which the universe has arisen, so to say. A conscious infinite power is at the basis of universal manifestation. Therefore, first having made it clear, partly there is some portion of consciousness which yet remains to be completed. Now then we will go to the psychological aspect and try to understand different functions of the human psychology, his inner and outer being, and to be able to distinguish parts of our own being so that when we practice meditation or yoga, we know what is happening and how it is to be related to our structure or constitution. See, that is the point. Now, we are dealing with consciousness. Consciousness has no need of a clear individual I. This is the position of some of the psychologists like Jung, as I told you. And to dispose variously the centralizing stress. Wherever the stress is put, the I attaches itself to that. So that one thinks of oneself as a mental being or a physical being or whatever it may be. The consciousness in me can dispose itself, its own stress in this way or in some other way. It may go down into the physical and work there in the physical nature, keeping all the rest behind or above for the time. Or it may go up into the overhead level and stand above the mind, life and body, seeing them as instrumental lower forms of itself and not seeing them at all and merged in the free, undifferentiated self. Or it may throw itself into an active, dynamic, cosmic consciousness and identify with that or do any number of other things without resorting to the help of this much overrated, meddlesome fly on the wheel which you call the clear individual I. This I, this little egoistic consciousness, is not necessary for consciousness to act. You understand that? Yes. The real I, if you want to use that word, is not clear individual. That is to say, a clear-cut, limited, separative ego. It is as wide as the universe. Real I. And wider, and even can contain the whole universe in itself. That's the real I. But that is not ahankara, but that is the Atman, the self. So you see, if you want a clear I, it is the I, that is the self. Consciousness is a fundamental thing. The fundamental thing in the whole existence. It is energy, motion, the movement of consciousness that creates the universe and all that is in it. Not only the macrocosm, but the microcosm is also nothing but consciousness arranging itself. For instance, when consciousness in its movement, or rather a certain stress of movement, forgets itself in the action, it becomes apparently unconscious energy. When consciousness forgets itself in the movement and becomes, then it becomes apparently unconscious energy. When it forgets itself in the form, it becomes an electron, an atom, the material object. In reality, it is still consciousness that works in the energy and determines the form and the evolution of the form. When it wants to liberate itself slowly, evolutionarily, out of matter, but still in the form, it emerges as life. The same consciousness emerges as life, as animal, as man, and it can go on evolving itself still further out of its involution and become something more than mere man. It is consciousness that becomes matter, that evolves into life, that evolves into mind, and can go further and beyond mind. If you can grasp that, then it ought not to be difficult to see further that it can subjectively formulate itself as a physical, a vital, and a mental, or a psychic consciousness. All these are present in man, but as they are all mixed up together in external consciousness with their real status behind in the inner being, one can only become fully aware of them by releasing the original limiting stress of the consciousness, which makes us live in our external being and become aware and centered within in the inner being. As the consciousness in us, by its external and externalization of or the stress, has to put all these things behind a wall or a veil, it has to break down the wall and the veil and get back in its stress into the inner parts of our existence. That is what we call living within. Then our external being seems to us something small, something superficial. We are, or we can become, aware of the large and rich and inexhaustible kingdom within. So also consciousness in us has drawn a lid or a covering, or whatever you like to call it, between the lower planes of mind-like body, supported by the psychic, and the higher plane which contains the spiritual kingdom, where the self is always free, limitless, and it can break or open the lid or covering and ascend there and become the self free, wide, luminous, or else bring down the influences, reflection, and finally even the presence and power of the higher consciousness into the lower nature, to the lower being. Now that is what consciousness is. It is not composed of parts. It is fundamental to being and itself formulates any part it chooses to manifest, developing them from above downwards by a progressive coming down from spiritual level towards involution in matter, or formulating them in an upward working in the front by what we call evolution. If it chooses to work in you through sense of ego, well, you think that it is the clear-cut individual I that does everything. If it begins to release itself from the limited working, you begin to expand your same I till it bursts into infinity and no longer exists, or you shed it and flower into a spiritual whiteness. Of course, this is not what is spoken of in modern materialistic thought as consciousness, because that thought is governed by science and uses consciousness only as a phenomenon that emerges out of inconscious matter and consists of certain reactions of the system to outward things. That is modern psychology. But that is a phenomenon of consciousness. It is not consciousness itself. When you study, you see, only as a phenomenon. But when you study phenomena, you study phenomenon of consciousness, not consciousness itself. That is not consciousness itself. it is even only a small part of the possible phenomenon of consciousness and can give no clue to the consciousness, the reality which is of the very essence of existence. Now here we have practically finished the part of consciousness. Now we are trying to take up and deal with what you might call the planes and parts of the being. And there I think I will have to make a little representation on the board. But first, I'll give you how he looks at the whole thing. The inner consciousness is so arranged. How? There are five main divisions of the ladder. At the top, above the head, are layers. We call them planes, of which we are not conscious and which become conscious to us only by sadhana, by spiritual effort. Those above the human mind, that is the higher consciousness, that is one. Below, from crown of the head to the throat, are layers. There are many, but layers of the mind. And there are three principal beings, one at the top of the head, communicating with the higher consciousness, another between the eyebrows, where is the thought, sight and will. The third is in the throat, which is the externalizing mind. A second division is from the shoulders to the navel. Well, these are the layers of the higher vital presided over by the heart center, where is the emotional being with the psyche hidden behind it. From the navel downward is the rest of the vital being containing several layers. From the bottom of the spine downwards are the layers of the physical consciousness proper, the material, and below that is the subconscious, which is also, which has many levels. Now that gives you a rough sketch of an outline. This is not detailed working of psychology, but it gives you a rough idea of the outline. I'll just put it on the board so that you may be able to see it, you see. Otherwise you'll miss the whole group of it. For us to make it some understanding. Look, here is the higher consciousness first, is it not? This is the higher consciousness, which we don't call it supermind for the time being, higher in the sense of beyond mind. Well, that is the first. Now, the second portion is made up of this part, up to the throat, you see? This is the second part. And second part is composed of three. First, just at the crown of the head, you see, that is one. Crown of the head is the higher, below is the mind, three levels. This top communicating with the higher consciousness, capable of communication. Between the eyebrows, the second center, which is the center of throat, so to say, center of eyebrows. And it is the center of, well, he calls it will, is it not? Yes. Between the eyebrows, this sight, and will. This is communication with above. This is crown communication. Communicates with the higher consciousness. Now that gives you the second, one, two, and three. You see? And then from the shoulders down to the navel, you get the other two, that is to say, between the. This is the externalizing mind. Throat is the externalizing mind. That is the third center there. Then this was the second part. Remember, though these three parts are not to be taken separately, you are only the second part. This is the third part, main division. Second, third. In the third you have, the third is between shoulder to the navel. Yes. The shoulders to the navel. Well, you call it this part, you see, navel part, up to here. Well, that gives you the center here. There is the fourth center, is it not? Yes, that is the fourth center. No, there is a third center with the fourth and fifth division. One part you can put as your fourth, and the navel you can put as the fifth function. But the main part is the third part, which is composed of the higher vital part, presided over by the heart. That is to say, heart and higher vital make up the third part. Heart and higher vital. And then the physical is at the base here. That is the fourth part. Fourth part is the physical center, bodily consciousness. And below the feet here, you have got the fifth part, which is made up of the subconscious. You get the first higher mind, third, the higher vital conscious. Well, rough division of the main part is given like this. But this is only one scheme. And you can always have various schemes of division of the functioning of the psychic order. And we are coming to the second division after some time. People get mixed up when they think about, how are things and parts related? You know, a little bit of something with regard to consciousness is, we took that consciousness is only not only mental. We have finished that portion, but there is a little addition. Consciousness is multidimensional. It has not got one dimension. It has got multidimensionality. There is a hierarchy of consciousness. Hierarchy means an arrangement of planes upwards and downwards, you see, from lowest to the highest. Infrarational, rational, and suprarational. You see, there is a hierarchy. This very thing can be rearranged in the form of infrarational, rational, and suprarational. You see, this portion is infrarational, for instance. This part is infrarational. Then this part is rational. And this is suprarational. You can always arrange it like physical and the vital is infrarational generally. And what is above the mind is suprarational. You see? That is another way of looking at it. You can divide the human consciousness in various ways. Well, I will just do it in another way also to show you that it is quite possible for the mind to make various, you know, sorts of analysis or various sorts of pictures in order to make the functioning of the inner being clear to itself. Yes. Consciousness is that we have already done. And when you say man is asleep, you also when he is asleep. The consciousness is not gone when he is asleep, you see. That was the one portion that I wanted to do now. Want to study psychology, you want to understand the various parts of one's own being. And man is generally not organized in parts of his being. So he confuses and calls mind anything that happens in my mind. It is quite a very loose term which is used. Mind is to be, well, if you want to use mind loosely, then for the functions which are really intellectual, you must evolve some other term. Otherwise, fix mind to its own, you know, proper definition. This creates a sort of a confusion by. And also men are not, because the functions themselves are mixed one with the other. So people are not conscious when they speak or think or try to enter into the understanding of their own inner constitution. They are not clear at all. That's why they say that, I had a desire in my mind. Now, desire hardly happens in the mind. Desire happens in the vital being. You see, what is the function of the mind? Yes, mind, we say mind. Mind is to think, to know, to understand, to comprehend, to judge, to observe. You see, that is mind, to logicize, to think. Vital, you say suddenly, to act, to possess, to desire. To enjoy, to expand, to conquer, to take hold of. Well, that is vital. You can't mix these two. And you can't miss it if you once know what it is. Absolutely, you can't commit a mistake. People who say that desire comes to their mind don't know what they're talking. Mind is something that thinks, reflects, you know, judges, logicizes, experiments, decides, understands, observes, detaches itself, and that is mind. While the vital acts is active, is expansive, is interested in movement, in doing, in conquering, in having, in possessing, in enjoying. That is vital. There's no mistake about it. Absolutely, Rook. And this, the modern psychologists even don't try to understand this very simple thing. They always confuse the nervous system with all the whole psychology of man, which has very little to do with the true psychology. Yes, nerves is one part of psychology, but it's not determinative at all. It is the inner functioning that are, and these are also instrumental. When you say mind, as if mind was not, the most essential part of psychology, mind is instrumental to the soul that is using the mind. You see, now emotion, when you say emotional being, well, there they get mixed up, whether it is 99 people will confuse it with the vital. Because most of the emotions or feelings that occur in human being are prompted by the vital being. The vital gives rise to emotions and feelings, and therefore people think that emotion is vital. It's not. Emotion can be vital, but emotion can be pure on its own level, in its own right. And emotion can be intellectual also, mental. Emotion can contact two levels at the same time. You see, emotional being is on one side connected with intellectual being, on another side connected with the vital. Therefore, both sides influence the emotion. But emotion can get rid of both of them and have a pure experience of emotional states. This is quite possible. Now, we are coming to a more detailed understanding of this whole working out, so I don't want to anticipate. But for the mind, we will go through a little carefully after some time. Just now, I will only try to give you a schema, means a sort of an arrangement, so that you may have a rough idea of the working of human psychology as we understand it. You see, you can divide even mind into three parts. Just for understanding, it's not that mind is divided actually like that, but you can observe the functioning of mind in three portions: pure mind, vital mind, physical mind. You can divide the vital being into similarly three parts: vital mind or mental vital, vital proper, and physical vital. You can also divide the physical being into physical mind, physical vital, and physical proper. Well, that gives you a rough idea of how these functions are mixed up with each other. Mind can be pure, can be also vital, influenced by the vital, can also be one that is subjected to the physical. You see, mind occurs or functions in roughly three modes. One mode is pure mind. Second mode is vital mind, mind influenced by the vital. And third is physical mind, mind under the control of the physical consciousness. You see, mind in which the physical element has so penetrated as to govern that part of mental being. Now that gives you a rough idea of the human psychology. Well, just put it on the board so that you can have an idea. Otherwise, you will get mixed up with the things, isn't it? Main portion, mind, is vital. Third is, now mind is physical mind. Why say vital mind, vital proper, and physical vital? Physical is physical, mental, and pure physical, physical in itself. Of course, the subconscious is below, that's another. This is, we are dividing the conscious operation. You get an idea here of the functioning, you see. Then vital mind, mental vital, mental physical. Vital mental, vital proper, vital physical. Then physical mental, physical vital, physical proper. Better to have that idea. So now you get some rough idea of the thing. Pure mind, communicates through the brain with the physical life? How does a pure mind connect itself with life? Pure mind is free. Well, it takes hold of the physical brain and communicates to life. You see, brain is a channel through which the pure mind communicates to life or communicates with life. Pure mind means what? Thinking mind. Pure mind, when you say what, which kind? Thinking mind. It is concerned with reasoning, with arguments to convince and come to a conclusion. It creates mental forms. And it creates activity of mental will also. Pure mind you can call the intellect when it combines willpower also with the power of knowing. Knowing and mental action. Mental action is mental will. So you, when you call it intelligence or intellect, well then in the intellect you combine the function of thinking and knowing and also willing and acting. That is, you know, that is the reason. The aspect of pure mind combining knowledge aspect and action aspect. Pure mind reasons, thinks, reflects. Reasons, thinks, reflect. It tries to answer the question, what is the truth? It puts this question, what is the truth, and tries to answer it. It also asks, what is it that I must do to direct its will ultimately, you see? It also can ask how it is to be done. If it decides what is to be done, it also wants to know how it is to be done. This is the realm of the pure mind, you see? Wants to know what is the truth. That is one. Secondly, it wants to know what is it that I must do. Two. And thirdly, it would want to know, well, how am I to do what is to be done? How this thing to be done is to be carried out or executed? That is a part of mind. And this question is decided by mental will or dynamic mind. You see, this pure mind has its portion of knowledge and portion of action. Portion of knowledge creates the power of thinking and deciding what is truth. And power of action gives it the guidance of what is to be done and how it is to be done. Pure mind also can give a decision about the will. Pure mind combines the mental will. That is one. Well, it also creates mental forms. Poetry, philosophy, logic. You see, mental forms are created by this pure mind. And speech also. Speech is a mental faculty. It serves as an expression of thought and also is used by the emotional and the vital being for their expression. Speech express is mental in its constitution, but speech is used not only by mind, but also by the vital being and the emotional being of man. Well, can say, therefore in one sense, now that gives you a rough idea of the pure mind. Mind, that is a thinking apparatus of man, which reasons, thinks, reflects, and answers the question, what is the truth? Then, what am I to do? And how am I to do it? All these questions are answered by pure intellect. Now you come to mental vital. Well, that portion is sensations and emotions which are really not mental in their origin and in their stuff. They rise from the vital being. They rise from the vital being and come up to the mind. And they take mental forms. And when the impulse or, you know, the sensations or emotion rising from the vital being enter the mental being and take mental form in the mind, then it is mental vital. You understand? The vital has entered into the mind and they have taken up a mental form. Well, then it becomes mental vital. Mental physical or physical mind, different. We are only, don't make a confusion in terms. Mental physical is not the same as physical mind. it is made up of habitual mental movement. Habitual movements going on in the mind without any act of reasoning. Habitual movement going on, repeating themselves without any reasoning. Even if it has a reasoning, it's a mechanical reasoning. It's not conscious reflection, thinking. It goes on repeating old ideas and impressions. There is no vital urge or a creative activity in this part of the mind. Well, that is the mental physical. You see, when you have to think of going on from here to Sedona, and there is a mechanical movement that goes on. And no reasoning behind it, because it's an impression that is there and you are not consciously trying to do anything about it. Well, I will go by this way, this way, this will happen and so on. Well, it's physical mind. There is no logic, there is no creative urge, there is no vital urge. It is only mechanical round. You see, that's it. That's the physical mind. Now you take up the second portion, the vital being. The vital being is from the navel and below. That is the center. Center is the navel being. People say, desire came to my mind. They don't understand what they are talking. Desire doesn't come in the mind at all. If you observe the rise of desire, you are always three is coming from below. Desire never comes like that. Never. I mean, you try to locate and you will see. Desire always comes like that. Even if it comes from above, it has managed to go like that and seems to come as if from the mind, but it is never originated in the mind. It's not the law of the mind to create desires. It's the vital being that creates desires and that functions on the basis of desire, because that is its proper work, dharma as you call it, you see. It's below the navel, and according to some, it is from heart up to the navel also. Well, now we take up vital being proper first, vital proper. Vital proper is a life movement, or the vital force trying to effectuate itself in life. The force of life, trying to be effective and successful or bring about its own results in life. That is the proper function of the vital being. Crudest form of this life force or vital force is desire. The vital is the seat, you can roughly say, of desire. That gives you an idea of what is mind and what is vital. Mind is what it wants to know. What is the truth? Well, vital is the seat of desire. It is force trying to possess. Vital force that is trying to enjoy. It is that which creates in man ambition, sex impulse, greed for money, for power, and egoistic forms of all desires. It is that which is behind it's a vital. And that presents man with the central part of difficulty in sadhana. In a spiritual life, it is this part and physical mind that present the greatest difficulties. Because physical mind goes on refusing any possibility of higher life, and vital goes on insisting on its own impulses, desires, movements to be fulfilled, you see. And it does not want to submit to or allow the aspiration to be seeded or put into the vital being. Do you understand? So the main part of difficulty in spiritual life comes from two sources mainly. One, the vital being, and the physical mind. Vital being refusing to give up its desire, impulse, ego, ambition, and desire to possess and enjoy and all impulses that are the proper function of the vital being. And physical mind refusing to accept any possibility except what is sensible is real. That's all it will say, you see. What I see and understand and touch is real, else is unreal. These are the two main obstacles. Well, Sri Aurobindo says that the crude form, desire, is very useful for life in nature. This desire is an obstacle for sadhana, but for nature it's a very good thing. He says for the growth of the organism, desire is necessary, because without that push, one would not try to progress, you see. The element of push is necessary, and desire and ambition supply that push to the organism to grow. That is, this vital wants to do things. It wants to throw itself out. That is its tendency. Mind wants, throws a light and wants to understand. Even when mind throws its light in order to understand. Mind doesn't throw itself out into movement or action or you know, possession, no. When mind wants and throws its light, mind says, I want to know what is it. It always, that is the demand. The vital self always wants to bring about results and, you know, success or victory or achievement and like that. Now, behind this vital proper, you will see the working of vital mind. This is vital proper. Desire impulse and the crude form being desire, all other, you know, forms of it, ambition and greed for money and power and all forms of ambition are there. That is a proper vital. Now, behind this is the vital mind. It goes straight from the vital being and not from the mind, this thought, vital mind. This vital mind does not reason. Pure mind reasons, but vital mind does not reason. It thinks and plans also, but quite in a different way from pure reasoning. Vital mind can plan. It can also reason, but on its own level, it does not work. It is a mind that stands apart and arranges how to realize an impulse. Vital mind, when it arranges, organizes, he does it how to realize an impulse, that's all. It is not bothered with whether it is right or wrong or whether it is true or false, no. You see, an animal, when it acts and catches the prey, it does it with great intelligence, is it not? That is vital mind. It has a plan, an impulse to be carried out. Well, it carries out the impulse correctly, step by step. I mean, the logic is indubitable. So there you see, the working of mind is vital mind. See, a shikari planning to kill, for instance, he is not bothered about whether he should kill or not, which is first the question. Pure mind will ask that question. But a shikari arranges his machan and everything, and well, this is how it is to be done. An impulse is to be carried out or realized. Well, that is the vital mind, you see. Yes. Yes, it is vital thought and not a mental thought. For instance, when Mussolini says, this is from Cherundo's writing, Mussolini says, Italy shall have a place under the sun. This is not a mental thought, it's a vital thought. You see, you get the distinction clear in your mind, you are an image of the vital. This is not your mind working. It also is... It is also not an emotion, it is a thought. One can say that the vital mind is desire mind, if you like to put it. You can say vital mind means desire mind. Then the third being is a physical vital, is it not? Vital proper, vital mind and physical vital. Well, physical vital, this part is necessary to realize the vital impulse on the physical plane. Whenever you want to carry out a vital impulse on the physical plane, well, the physical vital is necessary. It is made up of the nervous apparatus of man, you see. It is concerned with passing events, transitory movements, which is irritated over trifles and easily upset. It's a restless part of our being and makes the individual restless. That is the physical vital. Vital being is very necessary part of man's consciousness and psychology for the full development of human being. It is a vital that supports the mind in its upward movement, and without it, mind cannot effectuate itself in life. When the vital being is transformed, then it becomes a very useful and powerful instrument in the hand of the higher power. So the vital, in spite of it being a difficulty, is a great asset if it can be transformed. This is the problem, you see. Problem is how to utilize the vital in creating the higher life. Then you take up the physical being. Physical being is the consciousness which is mainly concerned with the body. Physical being is not body, please remember. It is a consciousness, total consciousness connected with the body is physical being. Body is the central, you know, pivot around which physical consciousness moves, but physical consciousness is much wider and more subtle than the gross physical body which we notice as the part of ourselves in the bodily consciousness. Physical mind observes and accepts physical things around, but does not go beyond the physical data. That is the physical mind, and that is the obstruction in the progress of spiritual life. It takes what it sees, what it touches, what it can know or weigh as truth and real. Whatever else it says, I doubt. That is the physical mind. Physical mind works on the physical data, accepts and observes it, accepts it as real, and refuses to accept anything else as real. It says, this is real, the rest is unreal. It hardly reasons. It is the furthest end necessary for work of the mental being, like a point of a pen, you see, or the brush of the painter. It is last part where the execution is to be done by the mental being. The vital physical or physico-vital is the vital moving in the physical being. It is that which makes the organs act and regulates the functioning of the physical being. It is that which gives health and strength to the body, the portion physical. They form the nervous end of the higher faculties, and they form the farthest end of the inner being through expressing itself on the physical plane. It all art and all creation of music and arts depends upon this part for their expression in life. And physical proper is the material part of our body. It is there, even in the cells of the body, this consciousness of physical being. The very cells of the physical being are conscious. That is how each organ performs its function, because the cells have a consciousness of their own. Cells are common in their constitution, but in their functioning they always differ because of the place where they are asked to function or made to function. The cells that have to see will perform the function of seeing. The cells that have to digest perform the function of digestion, because there is a consciousness, physical consciousness in the cell itself. Total consciousness of the body is there, and the consciousness is also embedded in the cells of the body, because it is that which particularizes the function of the physical being. This bodily consciousness knows what the body requires. And people generally spoil this consciousness by their vital desire and desire for taste and desire for life, or by medical dictation of saying, with the mind that this food is difficult to digest, this is deficient in this, and if you don't take this, you will get that, and all sorts of ideas are put, and this poor physical body is not given a chance to exercise its own decision and will, you see. Otherwise, he says, it is there in the cell of body, and it knows what the body requires. Body has no desires. Body has only needs. You see? So, and body knows what it needs. But people don't give it a chance. You observe the working in the cats and dogs. When they are not well, they eat grass. Is it not? They go in the garden and eat grass. Well, that's the need of the body is felt, and the body takes immediately. There is no desire there at all, because it is not their normal food, but the need of the body. It is some of the animals you see will go on licking the salt stones, rocks, because the body needs some salt. It's like that. Yeah. This classification he puts at one place very finely, that you should not take this classification all this, he says, must not be taken in too rigid and mathematical a sense. I'm quoting him now, because it is only a rough analysis for our understanding. It's not as if these parts were analyzed into, compartments and had no relation with each other. It is so much connected that what happens to the most material cell influences the mental being, pure and simple even. So, you see, it is instantaneous connection is there. But all this must not be taken in too rigid and mathematical a sense. It is an immense plastic movement full of play of possibilities, and must be seized by a flexible and subtle tact or sense in the seeing consciousness. It cannot be reduced to a too rigorous logical or mathematical formula. Each plane, Now, one point he makes out, two points. Each plane, in spite of its connection with the others above and below, is yet a world in itself, remember. Is a world in itself, with its own movements, forces, beings, types, forms, existing as if for its own, and for its own sake, under its own laws, for its own manifestation, without apparent regard for any other members of the great series, mental and vital and physical, you see, and above. Next, as a consequence, it follows also that only a limited part of the action of the vital or higher plane is concerned with the earth existence. Do not think that all these are only for the earth consciousness. They have their own independent existence. They are cosmic. There is a cosmic mind, there is a cosmic vital and cosmic physical. It's not as if man was so great that for him all these planes exist. These planes exist in their own right. Well, he gives a warning so as not to get mixed up with the movement. Now, we take up for today some portion of the vital being. We have read a rough classification we have had. Mental being will take up someday afterwards. It will take me some time. I have got notes, but I think it should be still more completed. For the vital being, we'll proceed now. The vital being, the second part. You see, the mental being, the vital being, the physical being. There are four parts of the vital being. Now he gives you a more deeper and a more clearer analysis. Four parts of the vital being. First, the mental vital being gives a mental expression by thought, speech, and otherwise to the emotions, desires, and passions, sensations, and other movements of the vital being. The emotional vital, which is the seat of various feelings such as love, joy, sorrow, hatred, and the rest. The central vital, which is the seat of the stronger vital longings and reactions, ambition, pride, fear, love of fame, attractions and repulsions, desire and passions of various kinds, and the field of many vital energies. Last, the lower vital, which is occupied with small desires, feelings, such as make the greater part of daily life, food, desire, sexual desire, small liking, disliking, vanity, quarrel, love of praise, anger to blame, little wishes of all kinds, and a numberless host of other things. Yes, this is nothing. When I read to an audience of ladies, I was reading to a college, you know, a girls' college. And then when I read to them something from Sri Aurobindo's reading of love of man and woman, 500 of them were there, girls were studying for their BA. They all staggered. I said, you think that you know better, but this gentleman sitting in his house for 40 years, not leaving his room, knows what you can know far better than what you know about yourself. Tremendous. It was with regard to marriage that he spoke there. It is in Savitri. Okay, I just got a passage and I just say, look here what he says about married life. And they were looking, they thought that Sri Aurobindo, what does he not know? Question is not what he knows, what does he not know? Well, here you see a list is so complete that you think perhaps it is exhaustive. The region from throat to the heart. And the heart, it's a double center. Heart is a double center, belonging in front to emotion and vital, and behind belongs to the psychic. The very heart center, top, the surface activity of heart center is related to the vital being, an emotional being, and behind it is related to the psychic being. Well, from the heart to the navel and below the navel. There is a part of nature which I have called the vital mind. The function of this mind is not to think or reason, to perceive and consider and find out or value things, for that is a function of thinking and mind proper, what you call buddhi or intellect, but to plan, to dream, imagine what can be done. That is vital mind. You say, I want to fly. It's the vital mind that arranges an aeroplane. You say, I want to reach the outer space. It's the vital mind that arranges the plan. You understand? Yeah. To plan, to dream and imagine what can be done. It makes formations for the future which the will can try to carry out if opportunity and circumstances become favorable, or even it can work to make them favorable. Create circumstances. That is what happens in the progress of man's culture, you see, that man finds something impossible and he says, well, I want to do it. 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, it gets done. You see? Same happened with the history of aeronautics. They first filled up with hydrogen gas and flew, and so many people died. The same happened to the climbing of the Himalaya. You see, so many people lost their life. But no, you present something that says impossible. Well, the first task that the vital will do is to say how to make it possible. That's how. It's always the beginning of something possible. It's a strange, but it is very true. Become favorable, or can make the circumstances themselves favorable. In man of action, this faculty is prominent. Man of action, in leader of their nature. Great man of action always have it in a very high measure. This power to make the circumstances favorable to what they want to get done. You see, President Roosevelt, he wanted to take part in the war and America was not in favor. And he saw to it that America, well, became favorable. Well, there's a trick of doing it. That is statesmanship. He didn't do it for himself, you see. But he knew that otherwise the consequences would be dangerous for America. And America didn't know. What they knew in the Pentagon, the whole of the nation did not perhaps know. But there it was. And it is first thin of the wedge, landing and Lewis landing, and then this, and then this, and then Earth jumped into the war. You see, that's it. He makes the circumstances favorable. That's the vital thing, you see. But even if one is not a man of action or practical realization, or if circumstances are not favorable, or one can do only small and ordinary things, this vital mind is there even in them. Vital mind does not function only in great persons, it functions in everybody. Well, it acts in them on a small scale, or if it needs someone, some sense of largeness, that it does very often to plan in a void, knowing that it cannot realize its plane, or else to imagine big things, stories, adventures, great doings, in which oneself is the hero or the creator. It is from that that a lot of literature, you know, what you call novels and stories, arises. But the projection of the vital mind, creating a possibility. When it knows it can't be done on physical, it does it on the plane of literature and imagination. So that you see, the man who writes puts himself in the whole creation. It is he that is projected, is it not? After all, himself is there, thrown out in the form of the literary creation. And you see, what he wanted to perhaps have done in the physical, well, he has only put in the form of an imaginative movement of the vital. The material vital, by material vital, we mean the vital so involved in mat movement and gross physical character. The action is to support the energies of the body and keep in it the capacity of life, growth and movement, and also impacts. That is material vital. Vital in the body, which keeps the body, you know. The nervous part of the being is a portion of the vital being. It is called vital physical. Life force closely enmeshed in the reactions, desires and needs and sensations of the physical body. The vital proper is the life force acting in its own nature, impulse, emotions, feelings, desires and ambition, having as their highest center what we may call the outer heart of emotion, while there is an inner heart where there are higher or psychic feelings and sensibilities, the emotions or intuitive yearnings, the impulses of the soul, if you like to call. That is to say, in the deep center of the psychic being, there are deeper emotions which are the proper movements of the soul of man. The soul impulses are not vital impulses, which create emotions of a different type. Generally, when the vital impulse is satisfied, the emotional being feels happy, pleasant, delightful, joy. Emotion. I'm not talking of the vital joy. I'm talking of emotional joy, emotion of enthusiasm, and so on. Well, when there is vital is defeated or, you know, fails, well, there is a feeling of sorrow in the emotional being. Now there the emotional being is connected with the vital. But there is a plane behind where the emotional being can have its pure play of the impulses of the soul, and they are really the deepest emotions possible to human experience. Well, intuitive yearnings and impulses of the soul, if you like to call it, or psychic feeling and psychic sensibilities. And this psychic feeling is present in some people, but people generally ignore it, I think, because they get it mixed up with the vital or mixed up with the surface emotional feelings and sentimentalism, you see. But if they can go behind, they will see that psychic sensibility or delicate feeling is something very strong and very deep. Or see, whenever something happens, or whenever the vital being or the mental being does something which is not in keeping with the aspiration of the soul, the psychic being, there is a sadness. The sadness of the psyche being, which is quite different from sadness of being defeated in your purposes or defeated in fulfilling your desires. A sadness which comes when the soul feels that it is resisted by this ignorant instrument which does not allow the fulfillment of its proper aspiration. Or the psychic being has, for instance, a universal will, goodwill for all. See, when it sees an incident or an event in which human suffering is, you know, unmerited, so to say, and it's a psychic which there may be a vital reaction. That is one. That is different. There may be a mental perception as to why this event has occurred. Mind can analyze and understand. Or the vital can have a direct reaction. But the psychic also can have a sensibility about it. And it immediately goes back to the cosmic, you see, universal feeling of sympathy and love, and a sort of a commiseration or a sort of, you know, desire to alleviate it if it can. Now that is a psychic feeling. It's not mental ambition, or it is not vital reaction, you see. No, it's quite different. It moves on the inmost plane of being, where one perceives something in the event which is of the deepest significance to the inmost soul. It has nothing to do with the outer thing, you see. Well, that gives you some understanding of the deeper movement of psychic emotion. The vital part of us is, of course, necessary for our completeness, but it is true instrument, it becomes a true instrument only when its feelings and tendencies have been purified by the psychic touch, and they have been taken up and governed by the spiritual light and spiritual power. Otherwise, the vital being does not generally react to the progress of sadhana, okay? Progress of spiritual life. I make a distinction between lower vital movements and the emotions of the heart. By nothing where these things are, by noting from where these things arise. Anger, fear, jealousy. Touch the heart, no doubt, just as they touch the mind. Anger, jealousy, fear, they all touch the heart, no doubt, just as they touch the mind. But they rise from the navel region, from the entrails. Stevenson has a striking passage in his Kidnapped where the hero notes that his fear is felt primarily not in the heart but in the stomach. It's true. Love, hope have their primary seat in the heart. So with the pity. But is it true that even anger, which is of the lower vital and therefore close to the body, invariably produces these effects? Of course, the psychologist can't know that another man is angry unless he shows physical signs of it. But man may be very angry without showing any sign. You can be very boiling and show a quite a imperturbable external front, exterior front, like the Japanese. You know that? They're a whole race almost trained to keep emotion like that. You can never know. He comes to you quite nicely, very funny. Suddenly you see a dagger flashes out and finished. That's all, an end of the matter. There is no sign of any emotion at all. So he can't know another man is angry unless he shows physical signs of it. But also he can't know what a man is thinking unless the man speaks or writes. Now, does it follow that the state of thought cannot be perceived without the sign in speaking or writing? And he gives the Japanese instance, just what I spoke. A Japan who is accustomed to control all his emotions and give no sign of it, if he's angry, the first sign you will have of it is a knife in your stomach. From a calm and smiling sensitive face. Will have done none of these things. When he's angry, not even an ebullition in the chest. In its place, there will be a subtle fire that will burn till his anger achieves itself at its end in action. So you see, all things that is expressed is not the only thing that is present and possible. The things exist when the sign of it is given in the form in which you notice it or not. A strong vital is one that is full of life force, has ambition, courage, great energy, a force for generosity in giving or for possessions, a lead, domination, a power to fulfill and materialize. Many other forms of vital strength there are also. It is often difficult for such a vital to surrender itself because of its sense of its own powers. But if it can do so, it can become an admirable instrument for divine work. A vital that is powerful is difficult to surrender. But if it can surrender, well, it can do a great, become a great instrument of the divine for divine work. A weak, no, weak vital has not the strength to turn to spirituality. Somebody asked in a letter that this strong vital is an obstacle to sadhana, to spiritual life, so it is better to have weak vital. So he says, no, weak vital is a disqualification almost, you see. A weak vital has no strength to turn to spiritual life. Being weak, more easily it falls under the wrong influence. And even when it wants, it finds it difficult to accept anything beyond its own habitual nature. A strong vital, when the will is there, can do it much more easily. Its one central difficulty is pride of the ego and attraction of power. The chest has more connection with the psychic than the vital. A strong vital may have a good physique, but often it may not have. It draws too much on the physical and eats it up as it were. You see, the strong vital very often eats up the physical. The physical vital is the being of small desires and greeds. The vital physical is a nervous being. They are closely connected with each other, physical vital and vital physical. I do not know about the subtle vital. One says subtle physical to distinguish from gross material physical, because to our normal experience, all physical is gross. But vital is in its nature non-material, so that the adjective is superfluous, subtle. By material vital, we mean the vital so involved in matter as to be bound by its movements and gross physical character. The action is to support the energies of the body and keep in it the capacity of life, growth and movement, also of sensitiveness to outer impact. The nervous part of being is a portion of the vital. It is a vital physical, life force closely enmeshed in reactions, desires and needs, sensations of the body. The vital proper is a life force acting on its own nature, impulses and emotions, feelings, desires and ambition, having as their highest center what we may call the outer heart of emotion, while there is an inner heart where are the higher psychic feelings and sensibilities, the emotions of intuitive yearning, the impulses of the soul. The vital part in us is, of course, necessary to our completeness, but it is the true instrument only when the feelings and tendencies have been purified by the psychic touch, taken up and governed by the spiritual light and power. The question is, has no practical meaning for the vital physical forces can be received from anywhere by the body, from around, from below, from above. The order of the plane is in reference to each other, not reference to the body. The reference to each other, the vital physical is below the physical mind, but above the material. But at the same time, these powers interpenetrate each other. Now that gives a rough outline of the vital being a little in detail, more detail than what I had given to you before when we took up the analysis which stands on the board. You will take up perhaps subconscious and mind so as to try to complete the analysis of functions of the human psychology. As I told you, that we do not undertake this work in order to academic interest. Our interest in this understanding is practical. What we want to do is to understand the parts of our psychology so as to be able to identify them when we practice sadhana. When something happens, then you will now be able to roughly put it in its proper place to some extent, whether it belongs to the mind, to the emotion, or to the vital being, whether it is of the physical nature, whether it is the vital nature, whether it partakes of the mental nature. Well, it becomes comparatively easy when you know the character of the psychological function which is described here in a rough schema. Of course, these are all connected with each other. Mind influences the vital, the body counter influences the vital and up to the mental being and so on. There is no state of consciousness or spirit which cannot influence even the body. You sit down and have peace, for instance. Now, if you experience peace in the inner consciousness, even your physical body will undergo a certain vibration of peace. Just as a vital impulse expresses itself in the physical being also, isn't it? Well, a mental state or even a spiritual state of vastness, of growth into infinity, for instance, it will have its vibration in the body. So that these are connected. What I want to stress is that you should not think of them in isolation, as if they were analyzed and, you know, put into different boxes or different compartments. They are interrelated so much so that to disentangle them requires a yogic knowledge. Otherwise, you don't even understand that they are different. People always mix themselves up and say, this is my idea when it is the desire. You see? So it is better for people who want to practice spiritual life to know something rough schema of the psychological functions, and also know that they are mixed and intermingling all the time, interacting. And you can separate them only when either you have purified the whole nature or you have risen to another level of consciousness from where you can put things in their proper place, you see, and even govern what is happening on each plane of the being. We might take up mind and subconscious tomorrow. Mind and the subconscious, that will be practically completing. We have taken up roughly mind today, but perhaps a little 15 minutes work on what is mind and its activity might make a little more clear idea of the mental being. Now the vital being is clear comparatively, physical being is clear, mental being is clear. Voila. Behind it is a psychic being. One day we'll take up something about the psychic being. If tomorrow there is time, we might take up the psychic being also. The subconscious, the mental, and the psychic. That will be perhaps tomorrow's program, if everything goes well and we have time.